is Mark Kyle Chafee versus William Carson Stevens. So, Mr. Stearns?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
As you know, each side has 15 minutes for argument. Would you like to reserve as appellant's counsel a portion of that for rebuttal?
Your Honor, maybe 3 minutes.
3 minutes?
Yes.
All right, you have that, and you may proceed when you're ready. I guess, is the guardian ad litem here today?
I am, Your Honor.
Do you want to sit at counsel's table?
Yes, sir.
We always appreciate having the guardian ad litem here and your thoughts in the case. And, so I don't know. Are you gonna argue as just Ms. Tiller or?
No, Your Honor. I'm just here to.
All right. Well, we appreciate the guardian ad litem working case. All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Starnes. You may proceed.
May it please the court, on behalf of Mark Chafee, we noted. Untimely appeal, citing several assignments of error that the court erred. I think my first argument would be that Mr. Chafee's circumstances are different than the Copeland case, than the appellant in Copeland, in that she did not have transportation. He's employed. He has custody of his youngest child, Remington, who's is the child of another woman. But he has custody of his youngest child, Remington.
Mr. Starnes, you've got 6 assignments of error, and it looks like the first 5 are fairly specific with regard to the findings the judge made, or things that you say the judge didn't consider and should have. And then the 6th one appears to be the due process, your client's due process rights. Am
yes.
I correct in that we would review the first 5 assignments of error under an abuse of discretion standard, and the 6th assignment of error, if we find that it's a, that would be a question of law?
The 6th assignment of error, Your Honor, is a question of law. I would also argue with the McGee case that we cited that the court is bound by the findings of fact that they made that Mr. Chafee was fit, that he was making $48,000 a year, financially able to care for the children, and in many respects had righted his evils according to the trial judge. And so we would also rely on the McGee case.
Talk a little bit about the living situation that which your client has, because he's living with his girlfriend's parents, right? And his plan for providing bedrooms or lodging for his children would be to move the girlfriend's parents' son out of a bedroom and move his children into that bedroom, which seems somewhat implausible, and also assumes a lot. Can you go into that?
Oh. So from the trial testimony, they were going to move the sibling to the basement. There was room in the basement for.
Wasn't even a bedroom though.
The appellee testified, the adoptive grandfather, that he was fine with Mr. Chafee, that he believed he could take him that day, and so
he never testified that he would be happy to withdraw his petition and relinquish custody.
He did not.
No. I think what he said, and the court somewhat gratefully acknowledged, is that these parties had a good relationship, the adults had a good relationship. And I think the court acknowledged that the appellant had made some significant strides in sobriety, employment, those types of things, but at this point was not in a position to take that day custody of the children. Is that fair?
Well, he took the witness stand the second time on redirect after there was a brief hearing, and he said he just needed a day. He needed 48 hours a week, a short period of time just to go get the, he'd already bought them clothes. He needed to go obtain beds for them was the only reason why he couldn't take them that day.
So you're saying that the court didn't give that testimony enough weight in making its final decision?
I don't believe so. I think that this appellant's in a better position than the appellant in Copeland, in that he had custody of the smallest child, that he had transportation, that he had a job in fiber optics making $48,000 a year. He's better off than the adopting parents, where the adopting grandfather is disabled and the adopting grandmother worked a part-time job, and so. I think the court erred in not following the statute. I think maybe
let me ask you about that. That was another question I had. You're talking about the court erring not following the statute. The court did go through all of the specific elements of the statute and explain why, based on those elements, he was ruling the way he was. So are you just talking about the cumulative effect of his ruling?
It's against the greater weight of the evidence, Your Honor, that Mr. Chafee had righted his wrongs and that he was fit. And that even in Copeland, I mean, the legislature taking the language out of the statute about the detriment to the child, in my humble opinion, puts it on a slippery slope, a shaky ground. It may be constitutional, may not be constitutional.
Now, so let me ask you about that. You're not saying statute on its face is unconstitutional, but that it's unconstitutional as applied in this particular case.
Yes, yes. And the court goes on in Copeland. The court doesn't just look at the factors. The court, when the Supreme Court reversed, There's still a test. It's whether or not the termination of the relationship. It was whether or not the continuance of the relationship is more detrimental than the termination of the relationship. And in this case, there's the continuance of the relationship is not detrimental to the child, where he passes football with them, where they don't want him to leave, where he signs them up for basketball.
There's a lot made about, he paid for him to sign them up for basketball, and that both of the schemes are very complimentary on that, but it's almost like a godfather or uncle, if you don't have enough money, you'll sign him up for basketball. But he's, throughout most of this period, he's incarcerated. He's not available. He is now.
Well, he even visited by telephone. He visited by telephone, and then when he got out, the testimony was that he visited every other week. There were years, though. There were years he was in prison.
Pamela Skeens testified, according to my notes here, that, and I think this is on the record 118 to 120, she testified that he was in jail from December 14, 2017 to February 11, 2019. And then again from June 18, 2018 to January 13, 2022. There obviously is a mistake of a year or something in there. And I wondered if you could clear up from the record. I want to go outside the record, of course. But when was he incarcerated? It sounds like
he had a probation violation after he was incarcerated. I think he was.
Was it pretty much from late 2017 until early 2022?
May of 2022 is my memory of when he testified that he was sober, which would be when he got out of prison.
And that was when, in 2022?
May of 2022.
So you know what I'm talking about here? Her testimony, at least according to the record, shows that he got it the first time in February of 2019, but then went back in June of 2018. So obviously those dates are wrong, and I wasn't sure what it was. But basically, I think I hear you say, correct me if I'm wrong, from late 2017 till May of 2022, pretty much.
Yes, yes. There was a period of time he absconded as well, but he was running from the law. I think the testimony was it was 11 months.
That was somewhere in between the two incarcerations.
Yes.
2019, I believe, was when that happened.
Yes.
Thank you.
So I think that his case is better than the appellant in Copeland. And
now, in the court's ruling, I'm looking at page 284. The court made it clear that about the test that the court should apply under the statute, that it's not a simple fitness or the best interests of the child, but whether the consequences of harm to the child or children, in this case, of allowing the parent-child relationship to continue by not granting the adoption petition would be more severe than the consequences of termination. So would you agree with me that the court articulated the correct standard, but just your view is, based on these facts, did not apply it correctly?
Agreed, yes. Based on the evidence that was testified to by Mr. Chafee, that the court did not follow that standard. The relationship with the parent is not detrimental to the child, where he has right at his ship, where he works, where he passes football with the children, signs them up for basketball. But the visits went really well. I think the adoptive father testified that Mr. Chafee's visits went wonderful. His problem was actually with his daughter, the mother, and that's where the rub was, that he didn't want the mother to visit because she couldn't, quote unquote, follow the rules.
They seem to be fonder of their son-in-law or former son-in-law than their daughter in the way they follow the rules and interact with the children.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit, though, about the situation of, I mean, your client is, as you say, has a job and is making good money, but he and his girlfriend and their son, Remington, who's quite young, right, are living with the girlfriend's parents. And the brother of the girlfriend, he could be asked to leave that house at any point in time. And not only would he have to leave, but he'd have to take these children, too. He has no real right to stay in that house except at the sufferance of the girlfriend's parents and the girlfriend to some degree. How does that provide stability to these children?
Well, the test, as the court has said, is not the best interest of the child, but it is more than the best interest of the child. There must be not only a finding that the adoption is in the best interest of the child, but as the courts have adduced, it's more than just the best interest of the child. And so he makes $48,000 a year. He can buy a house. He can rent an apartment that has multiple bedrooms in it.
And he talked about how much he made per hour, and that equal to $48,000. I did a calculation of that. Didn't come anywhere near $48,000. But presumably he could do a lot of overtime. I'm not going to quibble if that's what the record says, but you know what I'm talking about there. I mean, his hourly rate, he'd have to work something like 60 hours a week to equal $48,000 unless he's getting overtime or something. So I've wondered about that.
Well, fiber optics is very busy. People need internet. Judge, I see that I have about a minute left.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for answering all my questions. Good morning, Ms. Hiller. How are you?
I'm good, Ron. I represent Mr. and Mrs. Skeens. Mr. Skeens is the grandparent of these children, and Mrs. Skeens, who had a lot of responsibility, is the step-grandmother of the children. And I disagree with most of what Mr. Starnes has on behalf of the father. Judge Beals asked the question about him living in someone else's home. When I went back to review the evidence for this hearing, in looking back through 2013, when this first oldest child was born, Terry, that they called Bobo, mom was in prison and he was living with his mother. If you look through each instance in these children's lives, there was no home. The only place I could find that possibly they had a home of their own was when they said they lived in Marion in a trailer for a period of time. So from 2013 through 2022, this hearing, they were living with somebody else. They lived with the mother. They lived with a friend in Bristol. They lived with the dad. They went to Pennsylvania to take, or he went to Pennsylvania to take the newborn baby up there for a few months because his dad was trying to get custody. So he's never had a stable home during this whole period of time. And not only did he not have a stable home for the children, according to his testimony, he served 14 months out of 17 months, first time when he was thrown out of drug court, which was a violation. He served 14 months. He got out in February, I think, of 19. And he said he relapsed in June of 2019, but he was on the run for, I think he said he was on the run for 11 months. And his next time of incarceration, I don't recall the exact dates, but it was for 20 months. So he just got out in January of 22. So that was 34 months that he served, and then he was on the run for all those months. So all that time, the grandparents had the two younger children for 4 years and 4 months. So during all that time, he'd been incarcerated 34 months out of that time, and then he was on the run for part of it. So there was no stability in this man's life in the past. And I think Judge Kilgore correctly recognized that he had improved his situation some. He had a job, and he seemed to be doing well. Of course, he presented to the court that he had been sober since he got out of jail. He termed it sober. And when asked about an emergency room visit he had in probably June or July before we had the adoption hearing, he had been out with a bunch of buddies drinking somewhere, and he had ended up getting in an altercation and ended up in the emergency room, had to have stitches. So that's the instance we know about because he went to the emergency room.
We don't know the details of that, do we?
No, we don't know the details.
He
wasn't very forthcoming with the details of that, but he did say that he was drinking. It wasn't drugs.
In addition to acknowledging the strides that the father had made and the fact that he was on that day doing well, is it fair to conclude that the court found that the stability for the children was a primary consideration in its decision?
I think it was, Your Honor. These children were all special needs. When these grandparents first got them, Judge Powell, the juvenile judge, gave a whole list of instructions that they were to get birth certificates, get Social Security cards, take them to counselors. They did all of that. And the parents both acknowledged they didn't even know that these kids had all of these special needs until this hearing when they heard how detailed all the special needs were. So, you know, if you want to say it's a sign of good parenting, as Mr. Starnes would like to present to the court, and the fact that he needed to be in charge of doing some of the deciding for these children's lives, he didn't even know what the kids needed. And these the petitioners had been very stable. And another point I'd like to stress also about the money situation. he was making $16 an hour. I don't know what it comes out to, whether it's $48,000 or what it comes out to. But he said he started this in about March. We filed this adoption in April, and for various reasons it wasn't heard till October. So he had from March or April, when he knew that maybe his rights would be terminated, until October to rent an apartment, rent a house, buy beds for the children, to do whatever was necessary to get ready to take these children. And I think in the beginning argument, when we were notifying the judge a little bit about what the case was about, his attorney actually said he's not ready to take custody today. He needs to do a few more things. And then Judge Kilgore specifically asked Mr. Chapin several times, you know, why didn't you do this? You knew that your rights might be terminated, so why didn't you go out and buy the beds? Why didn't you do this? And when he asked two or three times, Mr. Chapin finally just said, well, I just didn't. I really didn't think I was going to get custody, so I just didn't. So he didn't have very much initiative to do anything for these children, and probably just was content with being able to visit and play ball with them. Of course, the comments, it was stressed about him willing to sign the older child up for baseball. Well, he just offered on that. There was really no evidence that really ever happened. So, you know, a stranger maybe would have done that $20 and signed that child up for baseball. There's a lot more to parenting than going out and throwing a baseball or signing a kid up for baseball. And
how do you respond to Mr. Starnes made the point that your client, Mr. Steens, is disabled now? I think he had a stroke while after taking on some of the kids. Is he? How do you respond to that? Is he's physically able to do this now?
Your Honor, he was physically able. Judge Kilgore was able to observe all these witnesses. We had a 6-hour hearing, and actually I was the only one disabled that day. I had a broken ankle, if you note the judge's comments, but he was able to observe Mr. Skeens and to see that he was able. And I think it's to their credit that they didn't have much money. He was disabled and she was working at the dollar store and had worked at a hospital. But still they took care of these children with no help. Even though Mr. Chapin was making good money after he got out of jail, he didn't contribute any of that money. The only thing we have in the evidence is that he was repaying the state $122 after they came after his wages. They were taking that out of his wages, and he has offered to pay $20 to sign up for ball. He didn't go out and support these kids or offer to help Mr. and Mrs. Skeens with supporting them. So I think they did the best they could with what they had to take care of these children. So I think it was to the children's benefit that the way the grandparents took care of them, that it wasn't to Mr. Chapin's benefit that he was doing better, because he didn't use that to better the children in any way. I think the detriment situation was decided a long time ago in Copeland. That was taken out of the statute in 2006, and there's a lot in the appellate's argument in regard to detriment. Now, I don't think the petitioners had to prove that it was a detriment to the children to be separated from their father. That's pretty clear that was done away with a long time ago. Judge Kilgore very carefully went through all of these, all of the details, and we would ask the court to look at Googe. I think Mr. Starnes had quoted Googe in regard to the procedure about the court. Once the circuit court has heard Oritenas, he heard it for 6 hours with all of these witnesses and was able to sit there and observe them, that unless it's clearly wrong what the judge ruled, that, you know, his ruling stands the same as a jury verdict would. And we would say that he listened to these people, he observed them, and he talked with the children. He couldn't look to the future to see if Mark Chapin was going to continue to do okay. After he said he was sober and this adoption had been filed for 2-3 months, he was out drinking, had to go to the emergency room. So I don't think the judge could have looked to the future and said, well, he's really straightened himself up and he's going to be a good dad to these kids. I think what the judge had to look at was going back to his previous 4 years and 4 months that the grandparents had the kids, his conduct. Most of it was incarceration. And in fact, when Mr. Chapin was asked the question about all the problems these kids have about them going to the counselor and so forth, asked if he thought his problems and the wife's problem or the mom's problems had anything to do with these children's problems. He said, well, possibly, but he didn't think all of their problems came from him because he hadn't really even been around the children. He'd been incarcerated. And I think that's probably very telling. He hadn't been around the children enough to even know they had these problems, much less to think he caused the problems.
Ms. Taylor, what's the evidence in the record that the children are doing well with the grandparents?
Well, Your Honor, the uncle and the aunt both testified that they were doing well. And I think even Mr. Chapin testified that the children were doing well, that the grandparents were taking good care of them, and he didn't have any concerns about the grandparents' home. And I think all the witnesses, I don't think anyone challenged the grandparents' home that the children weren't doing well, Your Honor. We've just asked the court to affirm the circuit court. He listened to everything and did a very good analysis of all of the requirements of Code Section 1205. And we think he made the right decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. And I assume the guardian ad litem is in agreement.
I am, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Starnes. You had asked for 3 minutes, and we had a lot of questions, so I'll give you your full 3 minutes.
Thank you. The goal is reunification of a parent-child whenever possible. We cited the Weaver versus Roanoke case. There must be more to the granting of an adoption than would be in the child's best interest. Morgan versus Malpass. We believe that Mr. Chafee proved that he had righted his ship and was fit, and for these reasons, the court should be reversed, that Mr. Chafee is able to care for the children. Dealing with fundamental liberty interest, the liberty interest of the parent in the care, custody, and control of their children is perhaps the oldest of the fundamental liberty interest recognized by this court, the Supreme Court in Troxell versus Granville. There's a presumption that a fit parent acts in the best interest of the children. Accordingly, so long as the parent is fit, there will normally be no reason for the state to inject itself into the private realm of the family to further question the ability of the parent to make the best decisions concerning the rearing that parent of that parent's children. Troxell. So there's a long-standing body of law on the due process 14th Amendment liberty interest, and you know, even in World War II, we were fighting the Germans. Meyer versus Nebraska. The German immigrants were able to teach German and have cultural things that are German, able to rear their children. That's all that Mr. Chafee's asking to do is, he doesn't deny that they're in a safe place, but the statute is lacking and still has these constitutional standards that the court must look and review based on the facts of every case, you know, whether or not it's constitutional.
So you say the statute is lacking. In what way is the statute lacking?
By deleting the detriment to the children directly from the statute, even though the cases still talk about it, that they're the detriment must be now the standard is the detriment must be more severe to continue the relationship than termination. And so the constitutional standards are there and applicable even if the legislature doesn't see fit to talk about them. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Starnes. The case is submitted. We thank you for your argument, Ms. Tiller and Mr. Starnes, and hope you have a good trip home, and the court will be back in touch with you.
Thank you, sir.